of the Stat Pack. Perhaps you can help solve a mystery.
Solve a mystery.
Yep. What's up, guys? Stat Pack back. I'm David Howell, joined by Daniel Benavides and good old Eli Dominguez.
I don't go by Daniel Benavides anymore. I don't know what I go by yet. I'm trying to come up with a new wrestler name.
Okay.
I feel like it's fitting since I'm going to WrestleMania.
Dan's going to WrestleMania, the road to WrestleMania.
Ultimo Benavides. You could be a luchador.
That's pretty good. Juventud Benavides. Remember Juventud? Anyway, yeah, so Eli, Dan, and me, that's us. We're the Stack Pack. Today we're covering Season 5, Episode 10.
That's us!
And it's two cases that are pretty good.
Pretty good.
Yeah. In the middle, there's an update about that poor little girl who was just like ditched in a field because her parents were like, we got too many of these.
Children in the cone.
Yeah.
That shit was
terrible.
That shit was fucked
so
up.
So sad.
Yeah, it was really sad. It was a bummer. So we'll skip right over that and we'll just mention it here up at the top. First, we're going to get into a psychic and one of the more credible. I don't know, man. Oh, I like this guy. I want to believe him.
I do, too. I looked him up.
So, yeah, well.
We did. Yeah, we did.
Yeah. Before we continue with this case, I just want to give a little shout out to our listeners. If you could donate to us, we're trying to raise $1,000. That is our goal.
For more beer.
No. I'll explain it later on in the story, but just to let you know right out of the gate. We need $1,000
and
it's really for beer.
It's actually, it's for George Anderson online, an online reading, $1,000.
What?
Yes, guys.
Yes, Eli, we're going to do a Zoom reading. You, me, David.
Oh, I'm so
George.
Down.
He's going to make us cry, dude.
Oh, dude,
we have so many dead friends.
Oh yeah, I know. I'm so down. We'll post it. We'll definitely record it and post it. Please. God. Oh my God. We need $1,000.
Oh yeah.
Send us your STEMIs so we can talk to dead people.
Yes.
Not just people. Our friends.
Dead relatives and fit friends.
Yeah.
Send us your STEMIs.
That sounds, I don't know. The end of this segment that we're getting into where we actually get to see him do a reading, like, I got the feels, man. That shit fucked me up a little bit.
Do you think super rich people just like go to him and be like, I'll give you 8 hours with my dead uncle?
Spoiler alert, it's really a demon.
Yeah. I actually just finished this new Stephen King novel, and it's about this little kid who can see people right after they die. He can talk to them and they can't lie to him. They just show up right out. They just show up looking at their bodies. And he said, and after a while, their voices fade, like a car radio, you know, down the street. And then after a while, you can't hear them, and then they just disappear.
That's when they go to John Edwards crossing over.
It's so good. Later, the newest Stephen King. I read it real quick. Light. I can't wait till they make it into a movie. It's got. Actually, I wouldn't say this kid has the shine, but it's pretty close.
About to say.
It reminded me of that.
Does he have the shine?
No, but he does help a cool. Drug addict detective solve some crime.
Speaking of detectives helping detectives solve crimes, the first they kind of go over as they're getting into this, they talk about some of the past like psychics that we talked about.
It's kind of like them, they're like, see, we've talked about this before, remember?
Yeah.
they mention what's her name? The girl who covered the movie about her where they whitewashed that asshole. They fucking whitewashed her.
Not even that one. Not even that one.
That shit pissed me off. Oh yeah. Well, there's the guy who draws dead relatives, and then there's the one lady who her ghost resolved her own murder, pretty much, right?
Yeah. Dorothy Allison was the first one that they talked about where she helped detectives, like police would kind of come to her and she helped police solve a lot of crimes.
Oh yeah, she's the one, that little boy, that like iconic Unsolved Mysteries image of the little toddler running alongside the lake.
And then the one that they whitewashed was Teresita Bassa.
Teresita Bassa. What was her ethnicity? Was she like...
She was Asian. I don't know what she, like, descent Filipino of Asian.
Or, yeah, I don't want to misspeak, but yeah, they fucking whitewashed her in that fucking movie.
Yeah, they made her just a white woman.
It's such a good, like, oh man, I feel like that story needs a new film adaptation. I'm calling you Mike Flanagan or Guillermo del Toro, like people that give ghosts like depth. They could do a really cool movie version of the Teresita Bassa.
Yeah, so they cover a couple of them. They also cover the woman that draws dead relatives that had passed years before. So yeah, he just kind of covers. He says, we've talked about these before. In the last 5 years of Unsolved Mysteries.
And the person they're talking about today, what we're talking about, is George Anderson. This is another episode that we're still in November 92. And we're talking about George Anderson, who pretty much claimed he'd communicate with spirits and deceased loved ones. So a little history on this dude. In 1958, he's a child stricken with chicken pox, like really bad pox. Apparently he also had an inflammation of the brain and spinal cord, and he nearly died. And apparently, I guess he had like a near-death experience, and when he came back, he had the gift, the shine. Yeah. The sixth sense, if you want to get all pretentious and M. Night Shyamalan about it. And I do.
Yeah, if you want to get Haley Joel Osment about it.
So 1980, George meets this radio host, Joel Martin, who Robert Stack like totally cuts off. He's like, well, I was working here. And Robert Stack's like,
George Anderson is like, needs he was a radio DJ. Host.
Well, we're going to just talk over on that. A
radio. And you're just like, shut up, Robert. We want to hear what this guy is saying.
I don't know. We really don't, actually. Yeah. He's like,
I kind of want to do.
I'm going to sum it up. This guy's a DJ. And a paranormal DJ.
You know, I'm going to say that if Robert Stack were to interrupt somebody, I'm sure it's for a good reason.
it's funny because you know that's all the like editors or directors or producers, but it's just like it's funny just imagining like Robert Stack at a party. like someone's telling a story and then he just starts talking over them in just way more precise and direct language.
Cut it off right there.
So yeah, in 1980 he meets this disc jockey.
And this dude's convinced that
The disc jockey has a reading, and it's very funny in the reenactment because like George is just like, just relax, just relax, try not to do any work. Let the ghost do all the work, and you're just like,
don't tell me anything. Don't tell me anything. Don't tell me anything. Let the ghost do their thing.
It's kind of like that scene in Back to the Future where Marty McFly comes to meet Doc and he's got that that thing on his helmet. He's like, don't say anything. And he's trying to guess where he's from. And he's like, you've come to sell me magazines. He's like, you know what this means? This goddamn thing doesn't work.
Classic Doc Brown. We actually saw that door. It's in Dallas.
Which one?
The door to Doc's
garage.
To Doc's garage. Is that the art museum in downtown Dallas?
I didn't know that.
Yeah, the security guard was like, "That's actually the door from Back to the Future." He's like, "I don't know why it's here, but that, yeah, that's what it is."
That's awesome.
At first, we thought he was bullshitting us, and then we like walked up to the door and like looked at the little like placard, and like at the end of it, it has a little blurb about featured as Doc Brown's garage.
There's also that's a really cool art museum. Have you been there lately?
Yeah.
There's a Van Gogh there. I mean, it's not the best.
Yeah,
it's
they're like, doing a whole like Van Gogh hay. A whole Van Gogh exhibit right now.
Oh, really? So there's a bunch of them there. Oh, that's cool. I think there's one that lives there. It's like a bunch of stacks of hay.
It's called the Van Gogh Experience. They're doing like a whole
the Van Gogh Express.
Oh, that'd be really cool to see actual Van Goghs like that. That's neat.
We should Van Gogh next time you guys are here.
So he starts giving information about the wife and the the guy's Joel's like, how do you know all this? And then George is like, she's right behind you. And then he kind of like freaks out. And then he's like, oh no, she's a spirit.
You can't see her, you dummy.
Yeah.
She's not really here, you silly bitch.
George starts wagging his finger and saying, like, I'm getting some this vibe. And then Joel stops George and is just like, no, stop doing that. And then
PTSD kicked in.
And then he tells the story about how his wife used to, like, say, like, you're just like a little boy. You're like a little boy. And just would, like, wag her finger at him in a very demeaning and, like, yeah, I'd be like, I'm fucking glad she's dead. That's what he
I'm not a little boy. I'm not a little boy anymore. I'm
not, a little boy.
Shirley.
Oh, and then this guy, like, pays for him to get an EKG, right? Or an EEG, sorry. And apparently his brain activity looked...
It's off the charts.
Well, it read like somebody who was half awake and half asleep, which, I don't know, is weird. And then what does Joel say? He's like, it pretty much they concluded that it's not normal.
Yeah.
In 82, George meets Barbara and John Lichta. And they were really distraught about the death of their 16-year-old son. David was killed in a hit and run in 82 after he left a party. And Barbara, the mom, was super depressed over his death. And apparently David's brother had, like, you know, a lot of anger towards the man who hit David and killed him.
Which I understand, for sure. I understand
that. Oh, of course. So the parents go to visit George Anderson to see if they can find out any information about their son's death. And
his name's George Anderson. I call him George Harrison. He's not from the fucking Beatles.
He's not the most underrated Beatle. When George meets the Lichtas, he didn't know anything. Obviously, they say before everything. Like, he didn't know anything before. And he knew a bunch of stuff about David. Apparently, George had felt that David's spirit had immediately came to them, and he was, like, very chatty and a high-spirited personality. And he just wanted to let his parents know that he was okay. Yeah, apparently the specifics were just wild.
Yeah, I think you already covered it a little bit, but just the segment goes into the reenactment about how the parents found out about his death and that he was, yeah, like David said, it was a hit and run. And that she knew, the cops showed up to the house. It was very not like him to call, and they just knew something was wrong.
Yeah.
Which, for people that don't remember not having cell phones, you couldn't call your loved ones when you weren't by a phone.
No beepers. Well, actually, maybe in 1982, maybe.
Was pagers. Well, anyways, they show the reading. They show a reenactment of the reading, and he tells them all the details about.
Yeah, he, like, guesses that the kid was 16. And you know what? I got to say, the mom in this scene was really good, and the guy who plays George is really good. Especially when you see the end, how the guy actually does do his readings. Yeah. The acting's good. I'm going to say it.
The thing about when he really does the readings is I thought he was actually writing. It doesn't seem like he's actually writing on paper. It seems like he's just doing, like, circles.
I thought he was drawing. Like, I literally had to ask Dave, is he like,
well, he says,
him? He's like, no.
After the session, he also gives them a Bob Ross painting. Yeah. Here's the Bob Ross painting.
Oh, yeah, it's a caricature.
Is this the loved one that we were talking to?
It's a caricature with a huge head and, like, a little hat with the
he's in a little tiny car with a clown hat.
Yeah, yeah.
Sitting on a dock with a shit-eating grin.
I think he literally, like, I think he just draws circles, like, it just helps him, like...
Yeah, it just helps him concentrate. But, yeah. Dude, that would be so funny. He should work that into his routine. He gives you a picture of a caricature of your dead loved one.
Yeah, like, he knew stuff, like, David was killed by the car, and he knew that somebody was angry about it, just like the brother was, and... apparently, according to George, David wanted the family to forgive the man who was responsible. And the Lichtas were completely convinced that they were actually talking to their son through George. And then also, there's the other family who lost a 17-year-old son named David. And then they, like, there's a whole little story about how the dad has a dream about this man giving him a reading after he's reading the book about David Lichta. And then they eventually... go to one of his readings, and he's able to, like, even though they're not sitting together, George is able to figure out.
It's not George. It's him and his older son go to one of these group readings.
Both of their, but the sons were sitting together and the dad's sitting away. And the
dad was sitting across. Yeah, like,
and he's
away.
Able to figure out that they're brothers and that the guy over there is their dad. And then he like says that like he's like, I'm getting flashes of David Licta. And then he tells us that David Licta and this other David are like there. So it's like.
He even makes comments like, oh, like that's funny that David used David to like come yeah. through.
It's like David Licta like went on the book tour with him after he wrote the book about yeah. about him contacting the 16-year-old from the grave. He's like, I'm going on the book tour.
What do you think David Licta's writer was?
Probably
a ghostwriter.
Oh, what? Oh, God.
Thank you, Eli. Beautiful. Thank you.
I was going to say a white sheet. Yeah, so, oh, yeah. And then the end of this segment is, of course, the Silverman family and the parents of Barry Silverman. And Barry Silverman had died of a rare cancer in his 30s. And this is the – they asked this family –
This is where we get chills. Literal chills.
Yeah, totally. They asked his family if they would do a reading on the show just so they could see how George worked. And so the sister of this man and the parents of this man sit down. And, yeah, it's intense. Like, he's like – at first he's like, oh, I'm seeing a father and it's the mom's dad. And he like jokes with her and says like, you're not forgotten and your boy's with me. And then all of a sudden, the boys, the man is comes very clear to him and says like, "I'm Barry," and all the specifics, and makes the dad cry when he says like, he's like, "Did you think that you let him down, or you know that you failed him? Because you did not, you know, like he wants you to like, you know, live your life in peace, knowing that you did not fail it, you know, that he didn't fail his son." And it worked on me. I was like, this is either very exploitative and he did know about this person's family, or wow. I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
It worked on me. I got goosebumps.
Oh no, it worked on me too.
However, people are still skeptical about George's claims. All right. So anyway, give us $1,000 so we can get our,
we're going to put it to rest. If you give us $1,000,
well, we I was going to say record update. It. He does Zoom sessions, and that's why we need your cash.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We need give us cash. That stimmy money.
Send us all the money that you get so we can give
if it to him. If our 500 listeners send us $2 each, that's all we need from you, $2.
Then we can talk to dead people for 65 minutes.
I want my $2. We'll record it. We'll tell you if it's legit.
You know, I wonder if they'd let us, or we could just do it anyway.
Secretly record it.
Just put it out. Patreon. No, we don't have that. Anyway, yeah, so the next case, well, like I said, in the middle, there's the one about the little girl left in the field. And the next case is an unexplained death, and a very interesting one at that. This is a really tragic, like, I don't know. It's like a real JonBenet, because in this one, the parents actually did not do it.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert.
Ouch.
Yeah, that JonBenet, man. There's a
it was the brother.
There's a lot of interesting. Oh, yeah. They just covered it up.
Yeah. I'm sick of like, oh, new information. Like, there's some new JonBenet thing on like that they keep trying to hawk on like Discovery Plus or something. I'm just like.
It was Burke.
Get the fuck over it. It was Burke. It was
definitely Burke.
He pooped on her bed. He was fucking crazy. He was a crazy kid.
He still might be crazy.
Yeah. I mean, shit. I don't want to hang out with no Burke. I don't want to hang out with no Burke Ramsey. Get the fuck out of here, Burke. Oh, shit. That Burke Ramsey? Oh, hell no.
Yeah, there's just too much. The notepad. The call that it just...
The scat play.
What scat play? I don't remember that.
Scat play. His scatological issues?
Oh, okay.
He was a fan of Scatman John and Ella Fitzgerald. Skibbity-bop-bop. Skibbity-boop.
The part that gets me was the 911 call. I'd never had it dissected the way that I saw the last time.
Was it on that like CBS one that was like 3 hours?
I think it was the one that Oh my gosh, what's his name?
The one that they, the straight up, the Ramses like straight up sued CBS over because it was like highly implied that it was probably Burke.
Yeah. With Jim Clemente, he's the one that did it.
Oh yeah.
And he hired all those like.
What other show was that guy on? Was he on, Making
He's a writer. He's a writer for like NCIS, I think. Very close knit with Bob Ruff. Bob Ruff has him on a bunch.
Hey, did you know that fucking Paul Holes is totally hosting America's Most Wanted?
Yeah, I did hear that.
Dude.
I did hear that.
I want to see some of those. Yeah, it's
me too.
He should have hosted. I didn't even think about it, but they should have got him to host Unsolved Mysteries.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Put Paul Holes in a fucking trench coat. What are we doing, guys?
Dude, what are we doing? Like, we are definitely hot for Holes. I'm a straight male, and I'd still leave my wife for him. Jocelyn, I'm sorry.
God. You know what I love? I love on the Murder Squad when they have like one-off episodes, like their little winter distraction. It's like, let's see what Paul Holes thinks of like JonBenet Ramsey. He's like, I've never looked into this case before, so give me the facts. And you're just like, what? What?
He was too busy trying to catch the
I know.
Freaking Golden State Killer.
It's just cool to hear his blind takes on like,
you know. He didn't have time for JonBenet Ramsey.
No, I mean, that was just an example, but it's just like, you know, famous, like, true crime nerds know about, and then he just kind of like, it's interesting to hear his like blind take on something that he doesn't know anything about.
Yeah.
The Murder Squad.
No, but what kind of threw me over the edge where I was convinced about Burke was the 911 call that the parents make, because the mom's frantic, and then all of a sudden, the call doesn't end, she stops talking, and she stops being frantic. And you hear like a couple seconds of just silence, and then she hangs up the phone. That's kind of what convinced me as a parent. If my child was missing.
Yeah, you'd be like, oh my God. Like even after you hung up the phone. But
yes.
I would tell Jocelyn,
like, well, I mean,
it's the just dad finding man. Her being like, oh my God, what? She's here. Oh, she's God. Here the whole
time.
That's weird. Oh, God. All right. Let's talk about Jocelyn Dwalaby, because the Dwalabies are fucking victims of shitty police
Jekyll and Dwalaby. I like saying it in an Australian accent.
Yeah, Dwalaby. The Dwalabies. The
Dwalabies.
The Dwalaby ate my baby.
The dingo.
The dingo took my Dwalaby baby. That's terrible. Dwalaby. That's disrespectful. I'm sorry. Oh, there's a...
Did you guys know that...
The fox bats. There's a fox bat in our pouch.
I'll probably cut this out.
I found him when I was looking for our daughter, the Wallaby.
Do you know the What We Do in the Shadows, like the original movie? You remember? Have you seen the original movie?
I don't think so.
No, the New Zealand one with Jermaine and stuff?
No.
For real?
I don't think so.
Dude, it's like the mockumentary about vampires? And they made it into an FX show spinoff, American?
No, I didn't see the original then. No. I saw the show.
You never seen the movie? You got to see the original movie, dude. It's
no, I didn't see the original movie.
I mean, the U.S. show is great, and it has there's a reason it exists. It deserves its place, but the movie is fucking great. But anyway, you know, remember in the original movie, the cops who come in and they're like, fuck, they're gonna see all the blood, and they hypnotize them so they don't see any of the blood, and they're just oh yeah, I see the problem here. And they're just like, yeah, this is a fire hazard. Like, there's, like, dead bodies everywhere, but they've been, like...
They're pointing at the missing fire alarm.
Yeah, like, they've been in trance, so they don't see any... There's, like, a vampire, like, floating right next to them, upside down. And then they're just, like, pointing at, like, a wire that's misplaced. But anyway...
That's hilarious.
So they... Apparently in New Zealand, there's a show called Wilmington Paranormal. And those two cops have their own show for, like, 3 seasons... And it's just like they're cops in little tiny New Zealand town, and they deal with paranormal shit. And the reason, and I remember them talking about making it, but I didn't know they actually made it. Like, it's been on since 2018, and they just said that this summer they're going to start premiering it on HBO, so we get to see it. Super dry New Zealand humor, and apparently Jermaine directed like the whole first season, and him and Taika wrote it and stuff. So it's literally just like. The fucking same What We Do in the Shadows universe.
Wow.
That's cool. That made me excited. It made me want to go to like find a torrent and download them now, but it's like, yeah. Oh, that's not a thing anymore.
Get back on LimeWire.
What is it? The Pirate Bay?
Pirate Bay?
Is it still there? Kickass, it is still Kickass there. Torrents? Fuck.
Kickass Torrent. Get back on Napster.
Oh, that's way too old school. Come on. If you just want to download Drive Kazaa, by Incubus.
Get on Kazaa.
Yeah, sure. If you just want to download She Fucking Hates Me by Puddle of Mud, sure. Just one song. Yeah, go for it.
Or remember getting Rickrolled? You would think it was something, and then it was just Rick Astley singing, I don't want to give you up.
Jacqueline Dwalaby was 7 years old, daughter of Cynthia, and the adopted daughter of David Dwalaby. So David's not the biological father. This was Cynthia's second husband. September 10th of 88, David and his son wake up early, and they're trying to be quiet to make sure they don't wake up everybody else in the house. And actually, his mom even lived with them in the basement, too. 7:15.
Did she?
Yeah, they don't really explain that really well in the episode, right? Because he's like, he says like, oh, I was waiting for mom to come home. Like, mom didn't come home. Like, this is like a pretty wild, like,
And then they talk about like
the Kruger mom.
Yeah.
Mom's out. Grandma's out banging.
Gamma hangs out at Teddy's every night.
Oh, she got plowed last night. Just like the grandpa from the grandpa from the Goldbergs, George Siegel, pours some out for the horny grandpa. 87 years young and hilarious. We watched the new episode last night. Hilarious till the last day. He had he had an extra hilarious, like, what did he dropped an F-bomb.
I love him.
I've
always
week.
Loved him.
Did he just say it to the dad? He's like, fuck you.
No, he's like, fuck off.
Something like that.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Now they're going to have to do a really sad episode where Pops passes.
I know. And they're not even going to be able to, like, use him in the episode. But that's kind of the way it happens, you know?
It's a bummer.
Yeah, it's going to be sad. I was even wondering if they're done filming. Kevin Smith posted a really sweet, like, rehearsal take because he's directed a couple episodes of the Goldbergs.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed like they all got along real nicely.
Yeah.
George
Matt
Siegel,
rest. Matt Mira is one of the writers. Him and Kevin Smith are pretty tight.
Oh, yeah. Because they
said
do
that Frasier podcast.
Yeah, they used to do it. Yeah. Matt Mira has a bunch.
I still love that podcast. Talk Salad and Scrambled Eggs.
Yeah, he also does James Bonding. And doesn't he do Star Trek The Next Conversation?
He does. He does.
With Andy Segura, who's actually another Goldbergs writer.
He's a nerd, man, but he's so funny.
I haven't listened to his stuff in a while. Him and his wife had a podcast about through in vitro, and I think
they did in vitro, and they got. I think it worked, man. They
yeah,
ended
finally.
Up having a baby.
I know it took him a long time. That's good podcasting. Okay, Matt Mira, cool. anyway, yeah. So horny grandma, that's where we were. So they notice pretty quickly. Thereabouts after that, the little girl is not in her bed. Her sheets are gone and her blanket's gone as well. They assume that she was playing with her friend. So he goes around looking for her to different houses and nothing. The mom's the one who notices the comforter's gone and stuff. And she'd never take, you know, the blanket outside with her. So when the mom went around the house to look around, she saw that the basement window had been broken. And it looked like somebody had tried to break in, obviously, and used the basement to gain entrance, used that window to gain entrance into the house. Hours later, FBI's there at the Dwalaby house, and they're trying to, you know, they're waiting around, seeing if there's going to be like a ransom demand, if, you know, like what's going to come of this, and nothing ever does. 4 days later, Jacqueline, I keep calling her Jocelyn. 4 days later, Jacqueline's body is discovered in a vacant field near Blue Island, Illinois. Also at the scene were her comforter and nightgown, along with a rope that was around Jacqueline's neck. God, do they say if she was, they don't say if she was sexually assaulted in Unsolved, they wouldn't in Unsolved Mysteries, but
yeah.
Was she?
I don't believe so.
It's weird that she was just strangled and murdered so brutally.
That is weird.
And there not being any sexual, like...
Now I'm even more sus.
It's really
There's weird. A couple things that do make me sus about the parents.
But we'll talk they're, about that I mean, later. But, I mean, spoiler alert, they completely didn't do it.
They've been they were exonerated.
The whole time, they're treating it as a kidnapping. They've already been looking into the parents, so... They've already been questioning Cynthia and David. They just keep asking them what they did that morning over and over. The cops also thought that the basement window was broken from the inside to make it look like somebody, you know, came in. And they said the dust on the windowsill had not been disturbed, which is like kind of dumb too, because dust. So the day after Jacqueline's disappearance, David agreed to take his first polygraph examination, and apparently he passed with no problem. But the day that Jacqueline's body was found, he was asked to take another polygraph, and this was before he knew that anything happened to his daughter. And he said that they were trying to, you know, configure the machine to see what a lie would look like on his part. And so they were like, you know, say, like, just say, if we ask you your name, say no, that's not my name. But then they said, like, you know, say yes to, did you kill your daughter? And he's like, I'm not going to say that recorded. Like, I'm not a fucking idiot. Of course yeah. I didn't do that, you know? And apparently that really pissed off the person giving the test. I mean, that sounds like somebody just setting somebody up like straight.
Oh,
up.
Absolutely. And he didn't fall for it.
Apparently after that second polygraph, he was interrogated for 5 hours. And then yeah. the cops just came in and told him that Jacqueline's body was found. And by that point, he'd been fucked with and, like, manipulated so much by the cops that he didn't even believe them. He thought it was just another tactic. So it's not until he goes home and sees, you know, his wife and his mother, right? Or her mother. I think it's his mother just crying on the couch together.
Yeah.
Apparently the autopsy couldn't even, decipher how exactly she was murdered. And September 17th, they had her funeral, but the investigation was still on. So they just keep trying to gather evidence for the next couple of months, trying to,
pin it on them.
Yeah. Try to pin it on the parents.
I don't know when the cops like just got that tunnel vision where they were just pigeonholed into like thinking it must've been the parents.
It's just, I don't know. They don't want to believe anything bad like that could happen in their, you know. In their neighborhood that wasn't isolated. So they finally get arrested. The parents are both arrested. And Cynthia's 2 months pregnant at the time. They keep insisting they're innocent, but it doesn't matter. April 1990, David and Cynthia go on trial for Jacqueline's murder. And the prosecution built its case mainly on what they call circumstantial evidence.
Oh, 100% circumstantial. There was no evidence whatsoever.
So one witness was this transit worker named Everett Mann. He had picked David out of a photo lineup, but when the guy breaks it down, it was like a pitch black parking lot. The guy is like, you know, hundreds of feet away from him.
75 yards, so 3/4 of the length of a football field.
Yeah, that's a football field, basically.
And he said he saw the dude's profile. And he was
profile able, from the side.
Yeah.
And then the lineup was portrait.
Yeah, they showed them from the face, from the front of the face.
Frontal. And then here's the kicker.
Yeah, get this.
Homeboy's Dan photograph was 30% bigger than the rest of the photos. So, of course, his nose would be bigger because the photo was 30% bigger.
Blown up. Yep.
It's so such bullshit. You could
kind of say the photo was not to scale.
So there was 2 other eyewitnesses that said that they saw Cynthia's car near where Jacqueline's body was found. But that turned out to be complete bullshit because they had way more credible witnesses saying that the car was parked at the house all night long.
Yeah.
So that was just like, you know, the cops, you know, it's just like, okay, there was a car in an area. Who knows? Also, they did forensic analysis on the window and were able to determine that it definitely was broken from the outside.
Let me guess, the forensic analysis was the forensic detective looked at the photograph. Is that?
Oh, yeah, there's glass. Yeah,
the glass is on the inside of the building, which would mean it was kicked in.
All right. That seems to make sense. All right. We're done here.
We're done.
But by the time this, it's funny because by the time that the guy's able to look at this photo, the Wallabies have already been arrested.
Yeah, they said it was too late.
The prosecution also questioned whether it was possible for someone to enter the house without disturbing the items that were like below the basement window. So
yes.
Yeah, they had the grandma's perfume and her Coke mirror.
A nightstand, a towel rack, a TV tray.
A glass straw.
A makeup tray. None of these items were disturbed.
Rolled up $100 bill. Rolled up Andrew Jackson.
Yeah, she was totally doing blow. It's the 80s. So to prove that somebody could totally do this, he shot a video. David shot a video of his neighbor just crawling through the window, no problem. And the neighbor was able to wedge his leg on the wall to enter without disturbing anything.
There's definitely two things that make me suspicious of the parents, though, but we'll talk about that in a little bit. I know that they've been exonerated, but for me, before I got that information, I was like, well, maybe.
It's weird. Yeah, Unsolved Mysteries doesn't talk about this evidence. Other prosecution evidence included a blood-stained pillow found in Jacqueline's bedroom. Head hairs.
They left that out completely.
Head hairs that were similar to Jacqueline's found in the trunk of her parents' car. Her brother claiming that she got spanked a lot by their parents. And a neighbor identifying the rope that killed Jacqueline as one that her brother often played with.
Whoa.
Very weird. Apparently the blood on the pillow could not be identified, and the hairs could not be confirmed as belonging to Jacqueline's. The defense focused on a convicted sex offender named Perry Hernandez, who committed a similar abduction 1 year after Jacqueline's murder. The Duwalabies never testified during the trial, and before the closing arguments, the judge addressed both legal teams without the jury present. Apparently, he had decided that the case against David Duwalaby would continue as scheduled.
But not that of Cynthia.
Yeah, Cynthia's... Yeah, they didn't find enough evidence to convict her. So, the jury deliberated for 3 days, and they found David Duwalaby guilty of first-degree murder, and he was sentenced to 45 years in prison. Yeah, I mean, it's weird. Like, Unsolved Mysteries really made the case look like they were completely innocent, but that's some weird evidence that they decided to leave out. I guess because they're kind of telling the story of redemption or whatever. So Cynthia and friends and family try to get David released, and the movement gets media attention. A guy named David Protest was everywhere criticizing the conviction of David Duwalaby. And he got the attention of some other press people, and they were all attempting to get David Duwalaby released. In October of 1991, the Illinois Court of Appeals reversed David's conviction and ordered him to be released. However, some investigators are still convinced that David Duwalaby is responsible for Jacqueline's murder. David and Cynthia Duwalaby are still searching for Jacqueline's real killer. So, yeah, it's a very interesting case. So, apparently, there was a couple of other suspects. I think we talked about one. But
yes, you talked about the Harry Hernandez, the registered sex offender, or the convicted sex offender, who ultimately was cleared of this case because it did not match his M.O. The other person you're thinking about, and it's kind of an update, was a suspect by the name of Timothy Guess. Guess who? If you will.
Is he the one that was exonerated that they show in the update?
No, that's Perry Hernandez is free and cleared.
Okay.
Exonerated is her stepfather.
Yeah. The guy they talk about in the update is the uncle, the one they said that like witnesses came forward and fucked up his alibi.
So yeah, after this episode was broadcast, two viewers called the telecenter and refuted the alibi of one of the original suspects, which was her biological uncle by the name of Timothy Guess. On the night of the incident, he claimed that he was working at a local restaurant, but five restaurant regulars that were at the restaurant that night don't recall him ever being there. Shortly after this happens, one of the witnesses that vouched for him as saying that he was there that night recanted her testimony. And here's where it gets even crazier. The apartment that is next to the field where she is found is linked to Timothy Guess.
What?
Here's the damning evidence. He knew the layout of their home, despite the fact that he had never been inside their home, and he was able to tell the detectives that the night of her disappearance, her bedroom light was off, but there was a light on in her closet used as a nightlight. That was information that was never passed on to the general public, but he knew that info.
Hmm.
And he had never been in the house before?
Yeah. But yet he knew the layout of their
home. So the only thing that like makes me suspect about the parents is that when he's out, I understand they're happy, but at the same time, it's not a win, man. Like, your daughter's still.
Dude. Oh, I also forgot to mention that Timothy Guess was also a diagnosed schizophrenic.
Yeah. But you have to think of it, dude. It's been like fucking years since their daughter's died. She has this child, a new child, that like the dad is like not even met at this point, you know? It is super happy.
Well, like I said, it is a happy moment. But and dude, that's all just me speculating, man. Like you can go off on dissecting the people's behavior. People it's are like weird.
The same thing with the Ramsey mom thing. Like, I mean, it is weird that she's not freaking out, but it's like it's also like, you know, when you're in shock, like sometimes silence is how people are in shock. Like they say, like, in, you know, when you watch the court cases, it's like, don't act too nonchalant, but don't act too serious because then people just think you're crazy. Don't act like everything's funny. Don't act
too desperate, but don't act too calm.
Don't act like everything's funny, but don't like act like everything's so serious.
Yeah, people read into that, dude. And I'm guilty of it. I mean, I did it in this segment. Like, I guess it's just tough because I wouldn't have acted like that as a parent.
Oh, there's another suspect in this case.
Tell me.
Burke Ramsey.
Burke Ramsey showed up. He wanted milk.
He was negative.
Like, I need.
So, I mean, there is a good possibility that her uncle broke into the house, being a paranoid schizophrenic, accidentally murdered her. Then stole her parents' car to ditch the body, and then went and drove it back to the house.
It is weird though that the mom happened to be out that night.
She wasn't. That's
where he went. The sexy grandma is what I mean. His mom.
Yeah, they never talk about the sexy grandma.
Maybe she worked night shifts.
Maybe
she was a third shifter.
Well, no, because in the reenactment, he's just like, oh, I guess mom just didn't come home last night. All right, like, that's normal.
Oh, no, it was, I guess,
and all of a sudden that night,
in late and then left and forgot to close the door. And it was like,
and all of a sudden that night.
What kind of grandmother comes home late and then just immediately leaves right afterwards? Like
a sexy one. The one that's got things to do.
The hey, door. To see. Hey, babe, do you mind?
The one that's got things to see and people to do. I should say.
Do you think she was just like at a bar? It was last call, and she just like met her dude for the night. I was like, "Hey, babe, like, can we?"
She was like, "Take me home tonight."
No. She's just like, "Hey, I don't like, we want to. I still want to keep partying with you, but can you stop off at my daughter's house? I got to grab my stash."
Maybe.
Yeah. No. It makes more sense that somebody with a mental illness would break in, take the little girl right out the front door, and not close it.
I like the take me home tonight theory.
Timothy Guess also told a reporter that a spirit had been living inside of him and had told him the details of Jacqueline's murder, which makes me like, all right, a spirit told you how your niece was murdered.
But he was exonerated, right?
No. No, unfortunately, charges were never brought against him due to lack of evidence and also being schizophrenic, and he passed away in 2002. The person you're thinking of that was charged and exonerated is her stepfather.
Oh, that's right. Okay, so we're talking about two different people. I don't know, man.
If, oh,
it's crazy that I've never heard
whiskey
of this.
Over there.
That's just Miss Patricia. Oh, that's just Miss Patricia. Oh, Miss Patricia's okay. Oh, I love Miss Patricia. My name's Hedwig. I'm just a little kid. Miss Patricia's a little scary.
Yeah, that's a good movie. I'm totally seeing a possibility of like a smart
situation. Why are we always talking about M. Night Shyamalan movies?
Because he's the best.
A good director.
Shut the fuck up, everybody. Lady in the Water is great. It's a magical movie that takes place in a crummy apartment
complex
pool.
And I gotta say, I'm fucking digging Servant.
Oh, did you see the end of the new season?
Yeah. I'm there for it. I don't care. I just want to know what happens.
Thanks for listening, guys. We're gonna keep on trucking. We'll be back next week with some more true crimey goodness. I've been David. Thanks for joining me, as always, my cohorts Daniel and Elias. For every mystery, there's someone somewhere who knows the truth. Perhaps that someone is listening. Perhaps that someone is you.